Hello, my lovely edge dwellers. Luca Halix here, Power Sorcerer. This is my She Who Knows audio version of my blog post for May the 25th, 2022. This is an essay that I wrote in September of 2005, and it's called Disaster, Intuition, and the Crapshoot of Life. It strikes me that we don't all of a sudden find ourselves living in a state of denial about anything. We don't wake up one morning with a penchant for not seeing what's in front of us. For example, the people of the Mississippi Delta didn't move to an uninhabited floodplain and think that they could live there without risk. River deltas do flood. The settlers from Europe would have known that, and so would the indigenous peoples of the area. Hurricanes, though, they might be a slightly different story. The people settling in the Mississippi Delta might not have known about the frequency or fury of hurricanes. I watched a topical TV documentary after Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans. It explained how the idea of levees came about after a flood devastated the then settlement. The settlers rebuilt their homes and businesses while at the same time extending and reinforcing the levees. As the town was hit over and over, they came to experience a pattern of devastation and recovery. I can't help but think that somewhere along the line, the settlers must have considered the fact that they could expect the unexpected of hurricanes and floods, accompanied by varying degrees of destruction. At some point in the evolution towards the community's modern sophistication and permanence, they likely came to believe that they had so much invested that it was worth the risk to protect it. Living with risk. I wonder how often civilization has found itself and continues to find itself in the situation of having incrementally made a decision, or series of decisions, to stay with a risky choice by not really acknowledging whether it is truly reasonable. Of course, the reason is not the only factor in such choices. There are the opportunities of potentially great trade profits, the benefits of how things are when hurricanes and floods are not in evidence, and the comfort and the convenience of habit. Once a city is well enough established to become a major hub, somewhere like San Francisco on a fault line or New Orleans at sea level, must not the residents make an assumption that it must be safe enough because all those millions of people are living there? It must be all right because it has been. So far. At what point do such choices not look like choices, not look like risk-taking any longer? At what point does it make sense? Does it ever? Do we consciously assess risk? Do we think to ourselves, well, I don't know anyone who's died here, so it can't be that bad. Or I won't be here for very long. I'll be gone before the big one hits. Or it won't happen to me. What are the odds? Or my family has always lived here and we're survivors. Or life is full of risks. I could as easily be hit by a bus while crossing the street. What sorts of justifications do we make? How do we rationalize knowing the facts about the risks of natural disasters or acts of God with continuing to live as if they couldn't happen at any time, which of course they can, as their occurrence is not governed by mere mortals? I suppose that one way in which we might continue in this denial would be to do things which we believe would mitigate the risks, such as building or strengthening levees or instituting emergency measures with backup systems. Being prepared. In the business world and the military world, this line of thinking is called a cost-benefit analysis. We cringe to some extent when we think of it in terms of human life. Nevertheless, it's what we're doing. The greater the risk and the less frequently we experience such disasters, the more we grapple with how much money we should invest in preparedness, insurance, and money set aside for disaster relief. We consider how much time we might have for all of this before it will be needed. In business school, students are taught that if the potential threat could completely wipe out your enterprise, you should at least invest enough time and money to create a solid contingency plan. For enterprise, read city, and for potential threat, read hurricane, flood, pandemic, climate, or energy crisis. I think I can safely state that nothing is as simple as the scenarios we outline in our preparedness plans. In a unidimensional society, we could prepare a contingency plan without having to worry that the funding that goes into one plan wouldn't have to come out of the coffers of another equally important plan. The real world is full of difficult choices. When there are so many justifiable demands on the same limited funds, how do we, as a responsible society, choose? Is life a crapshoot? We can pose it that life itself is about taking risks and that if we don't, we're really not living. There's always a risk of terrorism, of weather-related events or seismic activity, of human fallibility and of disease, to mention but a few. All are serious, largely unpredictable, and potentially catastrophic. Which risks are the riskiest of the lot? How can we predict? Without the benefit of hindsight, is it just a crapshoot? On the occasions when we win the crapshoot, does winning encourage us to continue taking risks, as unprepared as we are? And how do we react when we lose? Do we become more risk-averse? Do we start bargaining by promising that we will prepare better for the next one? Do we start looking for where to place blame? If there were, in our assessment, nothing but risks ahead with very few benefits, we might not choose to take such risks as living in a floodplain or tornado corridor or next door to a volatile dictator or engage in potentially risky behavior. But that's rarely the case. We're dealing with constant trade-offs on ever-shifting ground. When is a risk a calculated risk? At one time in my career, I worked for an insurance company whose very trade was risk. Assessing risk was how they determined what premiums to charge. Although they were in the business of risk, when the time came to pay out, it seemed to me that they didn't want to pay for the inevitable disasters. Paying out would cut into their profit, of which, when there were few disasters, there was a great deal. That's the premise of insurance. A group shares the amassing of funds so that there is enough money to cover one or more of the insured when disaster strikes. We call it spreading the risk. However, in life, we don't get used to the benefits while the crapshoot is. While increasingly believing that the disaster is unlikely. The longer we go without losing, or without obviously visible signs of losing, the more we lull ourselves into believing that there is less risk. This train of thought leads me to shift my focus from the world of cities and large-scale societal disasters to the more immediate but no less impactful realm of personal relationships. You might agree that relationships are also risky. It seems to me that the more we love, the more vulnerable we allow ourselves to become, and the more we rely on one another, the greater the risk of getting hurt, both emotionally and financially. We all know the statistics about the numbers of separations and divorces, accidents, illness, and deaths. We even know most of the reasons. They've become clichés by now. Most of us have seen relationships close to us disintegrate, if not our own, and yet we still fail to do the relationship preparation, maintenance, and healing that we are told can reduce the risks. There are always reasons, especially in hindsight. The kids were small and needed our attention. We didn't have the time. Our careers were all consuming. We were just waiting for life to slow down a little. We thought it was a bad year. We thought it would get better. I couldn't get him or her to see that there was a problem. It's just life. I can't expect things to be perfect. Everyone has bumps in their relationships. I suggest that our primary relationships carry huge expectations from both sides and from society. The cost of relationship dysfunction, especially with a family, are enormous and complicated. You would think that with the costs and benefits being so high, investing time and energy in awareness, skill building, and contingency planning would be the order of the day. And yet, they don't seem to be. I could as easily talk about our health as about relationships, whether physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual. Our denial about the state of all these in our lives is akin to that of the citizenry of New Orleans or insurance companies or the couple whose marriage is inching towards dysfunction and eventual breakdown. I'm not talking about the choices that are glaring and relatively simple. We're typically better with the roaring tigers that are emergencies. It's the complex choices that present enough difficulty that we put them off, often burying them at the back of the closet. I suspect that this is especially so when we meet with resistance. Those choices where our resources are stretched precariously thin, or our options are unclear or unpleasant, or where we're unsure of our position in the situation. For my part, I know I fall into asking myself whether I'm being logical, reasonable, and rational. I ask whether I know enough, whether I should compromise, whether I'm in the right. When we get right down to the crux of these choices, how many can even be measured rationally? Indeed, there are just so many unknowns that we're dealing with. Indeed, are there just so many unknowns that we're dealing with in a crapshoot? Where the odds are unknown or unknown to us, how do we go about assessing the risks? How much control do we believe that we have in our relationships, our communities, or in our countries? Feeling or believing that there's not enough time, knowledge, or resources, even if it only seems this way, leads us to inertia, to denial, and inaction. What if we were to use our intuition? If life is indeed a crapshoot, maybe we're better off using our intuition to make the final choices. I'm referring to healthy intuition, not the hopeful little voice that suggests that it might go away if you leave the risk in the back of the closet. Maybe using our intuition isn't such a lunatic way to make choices or aid in making them. I wonder how many New Orleans citizens heard a little voice inside them that told them that they needed to leave the city before or just before Hurricane Katrina. I wonder how many people stand beside their partner to be knowing or at least having a strong suspicion that they might be marrying the wrong person and then do it anyway. Or once into the relationship, how many people have a nagging inner voice that says there's something that isn't right and needs attention sooner rather than later? I know that we ignore our inner voice at our peril. Our collective intuition is calling to us. Time for change. Jumping to the bigger picture once again, for many years I have had a deep and frustrating sense that our system of government is just not working for us any longer. Doubtless it is better than those in many other places on the planet, but I don't believe ours is up to the task any longer. I dream of a system that is empowering to all the members of the citizenry it purports to represent. I want it to be designed to foster community inclusion, collaboration, and trust. I'm often embarrassed and ashamed as I listen to our elected representatives and our business leaders, both at home and abroad. I can no longer convince myself that they must be intelligent and worldly or they wouldn't have risen to the positions they have. Just when I think it can't get worse, it does. Although I consider myself a born optimist, when it comes time to vote at any level of government, I feel I have a choice between bad and worse. It's not that I think that the individuals are necessarily crooked or incompetent, rather that if anyone has to work in a system that is based on the concept of he with the most toys wins, that forces short-term win-lose thinking. It will not bring out the best of that person's abilities in their quest to be of service to others and to the whole. This sort of system will perforce attract those who can and are willing to work within it. I don't believe it is sustainable to our collective future. I'm very aware that criticizing doesn't make the system better. I admit to devolving into hopelessness on occasion, feeling that I don't have useful suggestions for improvement. I recognize that governance isn't my area of expertise. But how can my own system of representation and governance be beyond my expertise? I fervently hope that there are members of my community who find this challenge worthy of their passionate problem-solving capabilities, and when they surface, I will do my best to support them. In the meantime, I'm contributing from my area of expertise and passion to support the personal and professional empowerment of the people who are changing our world for the better. The question I pose to you today is this: what is our personal and societal risk if we ignore that which we know isn't conducive to the collective life on this planet that we wish to live?